on the stage. You are a star. When the songs are done, you don't know how beautiful you are. Oh, baby, how you light it up, making them fall in love. Oh, you're spinning like a record track. The lights are hot, gonna lose control. Please don't lose my number. Hey, Trixie, can you meet me by the corner? I'll leave the light on, need you undercovers. Hey, Trixie, can you feel me? I'm addicted. I'll leave the light on, sweet little bird.
Welcome to the Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only Caps Truce radio show that strictly talks hockey. If you got any questions, comments, concerns, whatever you got, give us a call. 204-269-8636. That is 204-269-UMFM.
Yeah, wide open tonight. We can take calls. We can certainly answer questions and or let you weigh in on the topic of discussion because there might be a few.
We're going to talk about, what, 2 months worth of hockey talk.
About a month. We did one in July, that's so we got right. We'll catch up over the last month, but we're okay in terms
mid-August.
Of what's going on.
We feed out already
as we fade out Rhea May here with Trixie. Good tune there. Yeah. Good selection there, Night Bean. So well done. Well done.
It's a good one.
Solid campaign right there.
Get some CanCon in there.
Yeah, nothing wrong with a little CanCon. No. Can't go wrong with that. How you been? How's everything going?
It's great. Yeah, it's good. Good things are. Summer's quickly winding down, which is not good, but at the same time it's always nice for summer to wind down because then you have less yard work to do.
That is true. Yeah.
I mean, I got a new house, so it's I put down sod a couple weeks ago. I got trees to put. It's just crazy, so it's all over the place.
So I mean my summer's been going well too. It's been super busy. I was just complaining about how busy I was in terms of everything that was
barely,
going on.
Barely stumbling in the tiredness.
Barely get into the studio here then. A lot of stuff going on, a lot of information going on about things that aren't happening in the NHL right now, and that would be the restricted free agents. We're going to start with that topic, folks, so be prepared, because there are some big names still out there.
You should just play crickets, and that's pretty much
that might be it. There are some big names still out there that haven't been signed that are certainly waiting to be signed, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I'm going to run through a handful of them right now. And you could probably build a fairly significant all-star team if you really wanted to. Let's start with Boston's Charlie McAvoy. That's a big one.
Yeah, good start for your defense. Yeah,
Nothing wrong with that setup. We moved to Calgary, where Matthew Tkachuk still unsigned.
Good young grit. Some young grit there.
He would be an interesting pickup, if that's for sure. Not that I'm too worried about anything else that's going on here, but Mikko Rantanen. In Colorado, still unsigned.
Your star center right there.
He's a bit of an interest. Zach Werenski from Columbus, still unsigned.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Got a pretty solid first line. If you go in Charlie McAvoy, Zach Werenski, Tkachuk, and then Rantanen, you've got 4 out of 5 right now. Hold on, there's one. Julius Honka from Dallas is still out there. You got a second line defender now. Looking at a couple others that are out there, not that he's a big guy, but it's certainly a big name, but he still hasn't been signed. Jesse Puljujärvi from Edmonton, in terms of catching up with him.
Doesn't look like he probably won't sign with Edmonton.
Doesn't sound good, no. Adrian Kempe from Los Angeles, still out there, who I thought had a fairly decent season last year for the Kings, considering what was going on.
Yeah, Kings weren't very good last year. He one bright spot there, for sure.
A team without a GM right now, the Minnesota Wild, have Kevin Fiala still sitting there as an RFA.
Yeah.
Joel Eriksson Ek as well, if you really want to count them all in there, but that's a tough one. I kind of look at some of these players and I just go, what are you thinking about? New York Islanders, Anthony Beauvillier still out there.
Yeah, he was a good player for them this year.
Michael Dal Cole from the Josh Hosang still out there from the Islanders. Rangers still in a huge battle right now to try and sign Brendan Lemieux.
I think you got to sign him. I mean, the Rangers good, young, keeps it your young core, and some grit on the Rangers. The Rangers are going to have a lot of, high flying, offensive players. You're going to need some grit there to to offset that a little bit, to help those guys out.
They got a ton of cap space still to use, and I'm thinking they should probably use it on somebody other than Kevin Hayes. But hey, whatever. Travis Konecny and Ivan Provorov from Philadelphia still unsigned.
Yeah. Did you hear about the rumor about Kevin Hayes and his I wasn't going to
sign? The only reason, yeah, I read that today. The only reason I signed with Philly is because they offered me overpaid. They offered me so much money.
Yeah.
That's insanity.
Yeah.
Marcus Pedersen from Pittsburgh, who they acquired last season, a defender, was actually very good down the stretch. Again, what are you doing out in Pittsburgh? I know they got cap trouble there, but that's a guy you probably want to get under contract for sure. Guy who was really good in the playoffs for them, Ivan Barbashev from St. Louis, still unsigned as a restricted free agent. Mm-hmm. Braden Point, obviously from Tampa Bay, still out there. Mitch Marner from Toronto, another name that's still hanging out there. Brock Besser from Vancouver.
That's a surprise.
They got a little bit of cap room to play with. They're not a lot to worry about there. And then of course Winnipeg,
two big
Kyle
ones.
Connor, Patrick Laine. Those are big ones.
Yeah,
those are big ones.
Gotta find room, but I mean, I don't. Doesn't sound like anybody's panicking. I mean, I think the only one we've heard a lot about is Mitch Marner's contract.
Well, yeah, because Mitch has made some outlandish, you know, sort of demands. I mean, I get it. Like, he's looking to try and get into free agency where he can make big money, much like what happened down with Sebastian Aho, where he forced Carolina to match that trade or match that that demand. But I look at this and I go, there's no way. Again, if you're asking for 3 years and $10 million per Mitch Marner, you're not going to get it. The largest bridge contract, for those that don't know, the largest bridge contract ever handed out was to Kucherov 2 years ago, when he signed for $4.47 million per season.
For two seasons,
yeah, I believe it was. Even if it wasn't, it was 3 seasons, still a pretty good deal, considering that he got paid big time on the back end of that.
Yeah.
But this is where, and Pierre LeBrun brought this up a little bit today, about how the second contract that players get after that entry-level contract expires and they're going into that bridge deal, into that sort of second contract, no longer fits into the salary cap structure that teams once adopted, where rookies got paid a little, veterans got paid a lot.
Yeah.
You're now paying for the youth. You're now paying to buy some of those unrestricted free agent, years with some dollars. And it's going to cost you a lot more money. Maybe you don't load up on veterans anymore, as we've seen problems with Vegas running into the cap, San Jose running into the cap, Toronto running into the cap, and they've had to make some deals, had to make swap some players, and maybe pick up some dead contracts to open up some cap space.
I mean, you look at the past few years with Chicago. They kind of did that too, where they signed a couple of their veterans to long deals, right? And then they can't really sign very many big young players because they can't afford it. So with Marner, I think he deserves to get paid, that's for sure. I mean, if you look at his points output compared to guys like Tavares and Matthews there, I mean, he's right up there. So what would be the difference of
it's funny that you bring that up though. Because Andrew Berkshire went on record as saying that in terms of point production, he's up there, but in terms of actually generating scoring, Mitch Marner is worse than Tavares, Matthews, Nylander on that team. He's the fourth best player to do so.
Okay, well.
So he's there in terms of getting his touches, basically, is what he's saying, but he doesn't actually generate the offense that those guys do.
No, he finishes.
Sure, and that's great.
He's there at the right time, right? Whatever.
But, I mean, that's where Berkshire was saying maybe your demands are a little bit high for what you want there, Mitch Marner, because you're not in Tavares and Matthews territory yet in terms of generating offense. You get your touches, but you don't actually come down the ice, set up the play, dish a pass for an easy tap in goal or anything like that. You're the guy that's making the pass to me and I'll pass it to somebody else, or pass to me and I'll finish it off.
Yeah. I mean, I think with his 3 years at $10 million a season, I think he's got to start somewhere. It's not really what they're going to get, obviously, but it's...
Well, I'm pretty sure that's going to end the conversation at the same time.
But, I mean, it's going to end, but also start. See, okay, he's there. We're here. We got to kind of push ourselves to the middle. I mean, Marner's got to know that 3 years, I mean, if you're saying the highest bridge deal ever was four and a half, whatever it was.
Well, and that's likely going to change now.
Yeah,
because the market's changed, and certainly the value of contracts have changed, We'll see what happens as we go forward.
Yeah.
Kyle Connor in town this week with the Players' Championship here in Winnipeg being played. Said that there's been some discussions about what he wants. He wants a long-term contract. He wants to stay with the Jets. He wants to be here. it sounds like they're all on the same page. It just might be dollars and cents that's keeping them apart right now.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, we've kind of said from the beginning, it's either you either sign one of these guys to a long contract, pay them, and then the other one's got to get a bridge deal. That's pretty much how it's pretty much sounds like it's going to work.
It sounds like Laine is betting on himself to take the bridge deal. He'll take the bridge deal just because he thinks that, again, not saying that 30 goals is a bad season by any means, but for Laine's standards, he's saying, I can do better.
Do better, yeah. And if he comes out and he puts up 50, well, then you got a big, big payday coming up.
Well, sure, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean...
But that's what he's betting on, and I mean, I don't have a problem with that. If that's the way that you feel... You want to take this franchise, you want to be the guy, and you want to go and prove to everybody that you're worth $12, $13, $14 million a season because you can score 50 in this league,
yep.
Go do it.
Yeah.
I have no problem with that.
And do it consistently.
Well, I mean, again, I'm not going to bring his name up just because, but when Evander Kane came out and said after the trade to Buffalo and said he could score 50 goals in this league, no problem, and still hasn't hit 30. Yep. Well, he hit 30 last season or whatever it was. Yep. One season of 30 goals. Yep. Like, it's a tough league to score in, and you're an elite shooter, you're an elite scorer, we get that. 30 goals is there's 31 other teams in the NHL, 32 if you consider the Jets, but 31 other teams including Seattle who would take 30 goals in a heartbeat.
Oh yeah, 30 goals is huge nowadays.
Yeah,
there's not too many guys that can put up 50. I mean, in the last few years, who's done it? Ovechkin, Stamkos, guys like that. There's not...
Didn't Kucherov hit 50 once?
Kucherov might have hit 50, yeah. So, I mean, you got three guys in a league full of how many players, you know? Hundreds of players that do it. I mean, it doesn't happen very often. So to think that you can do it and put the pressure on you to do it, I mean, I think it's probably unrealistic that he can probably get to 50, but, I mean, I think it's unrealistic that a guy like that can get to 50 consistently. So
the thing that scares me, I think, and this is where I look at Marner and I look at Laine, they bring elements of scoring to your team, no doubt. Like Marner led the team in, or was top one of the top scorers. Toronto maybe led the team in points last year. Fantastic season by all means. Mm-hmm. Laine had 18 of his goals in 1 month, scored 12 everywhere, or whatever it was, 13 or 14 everywhere
five in
else.
One game,
yeah. like Laine can score. We know that. For a guy like Matt Tkachuk, who brings the power forward element, he may not score 40, he may not score 100 points, but he is going to be that guy that you roll out there when you need a spark, when you want to see a hit, when you need a little bit of excitement generated within your team.
He's your overall
He's well-rounded. He can score goals, he can put up points, and he can bring the physical element.
Yeah.
What's a guy like Matt Tkachuk that worth then to Calgary, who's already tight against the cap? They're already talking about moving players out to try and sign Tkachuk now.
Yeah, for sure.
A guy like Travis Hamonic sounds like he's on the block right now, simply because $5 million a season for Hamonic is money they need for Tkachuk.
Yeah, and when you're not putting up the production you needed for $5 million a season, you got to move something. I mean, a guy like Tkachuk, I mean, you got to think he's going to get around, you know, Goudreau money. Maybe a little less than what is Goudreau getting? 8?
Somewhere around there.
So I mean, I think you got to go think of that range. I mean, he's as much as he brings to the team. I mean, I think Goudreau and Tkachuk
6.75 per season.
So I mean, around 6.5 to 7, I think Tkachuk you can get him for. I would think. I don't think anybody else on that team is probably more valuable than Johnny Goudreau. So, I mean, to pay anybody more than that is tough, so.
But that's the problem that we're running into here in Winnipeg, in that you look at what Blake Wheeler does.
Yeah.
Consistent 90-point scorer. You know, he's always in the mix in terms of being a top-10 scorer.
Yeah.
And he's going into a big contract year. I mean, in terms of the contract he signed, it's a huge extension. It's $8 million a season. You look at a guy like Nick Ehlers. Again, we're not even talking about playoffs. You just look at a guy like Nick Ehlers, a little bit banged up, has some injury problems, but he's getting 6 a year.
Yeah.
How do you give a guy like Kyle Connor, who's been pretty durable and has scored 30 goals in a season, less than what Ehlers makes?
Yeah.
And how do you give a guy like Laine less than what Ehlers makes? Like, the Jets may have overpaid for Ehlers at the time. I mean, yes, he was looked at as part of this core for the future.
Yeah.
But what's Mark Scheifele worth when his contract comes up now?
Well,
because we're talking about four players now that could earn about $40 to $45 million.
Yeah, and I mean, I think Blake Wheeler had to be your standard. I mean, I think NHL.com rated him higher than Patrick Laine in best wingers in the NHL. So, I mean, if you think of that, you got to think, if he's ranked or rated the best winger on that team, how do you pay another guy that is not as highly, you know, touted necessarily to be your best winger? How do you pay him more than Blake Wheeler? I mean, I know it doesn't quite work that way, but it should.
If you're Tampa Bay, how do you explain to Braden Point that you have no money left to sign him and you've got all the other great stars? You should probably take maybe a hometown discount. When you see a guy like Vasilevskiy take a monster contract on, and don't get me wrong, goaltending is important. All the teams are building from the back end out, but take a monster contract on when Braden Point was one of their best point producers for the Tampa Bay Lightning. This is another team that right now is in purgatory when it comes to salary cap.
It's a tough thing now. I mean, especially with the amount of young talent that's in the game right now, paying these guys what they deserve is tough because of salary cap and because of issues like that, where you got contracts, you got kind of we'll call them standards on your team of who's getting paid what. Now you got to kind of adjust how those things are working. So
It's going to be interesting, because I think that there's no real easy answer here for anybody when it comes to, you know, how do you fit players into contracts and how do you get things working properly. But I look at this and I go, all right, okay, like we got room to sign these guys. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
But you basically are trapped after that.
Yeah, your future is... You're stuck.
I mean, unless I say this only because it honestly has to happen coming up, is that salaries are now escalating to the point where they've outpaced the growth of the game. We talked about, in the last salary cap that we went through, the salary cap negotiation that we went through in terms of the lockout when we first started this show 7 years ago, was awful because... They came in, they said, here's your salary cap. Players complained because they basically forced everybody to take less money as the salary cap grew in relation to hockey-related revenue.
Yeah.
The NHL makes billions of dollars per year on TV contracts and everything else. And what they're saying, what the players are saying now is we want that money. We deserve part of that money. But the salaries have already started to increase. So if there isn't a major increase if there isn't a major change to the CBA... We might see players retiring at age 30 now because they simply can't find a contract playing for much, much less than what they may perceive their market value for, in order for these teams to keep all their young stars together.
Yeah, I mean, you got to, and it's also changing the peak years of these guys are changing. You know, it used to be, 26, 27, 28, that's your peak years. Now guys are starting to have their strongest years at 22, 23, 24. So now you got to think, well, if those guys, after 24, 25, they're starting to, quote-unquote, slow down a bit, and you got guys younger that are being better, your contract should be
less. But it's not that they're slowing down. I mean, again, there are guys who are still playing well into their 30s. I mean, again, take nothing away from some of these guys that are finding their stride. Again, a guy like Blake Wheeler took a while to develop and find that stride. The problem now, though, is that the money, the way the contract structures are set up, the way the salary cap is set up, is that you cannot run it like the old boys club did, where the vets get all the money and the rookies get nothing. Right. It's a completely different setup now, and I don't know if GMs have adapted to that, because we're finding out that guys like Wayne Simmonds taking $5 million may not be the best investment for the New Jersey Devils. When you're talking about having a Nico Hischier, when you're talking about having a Jack Hughes, when you're talking about having, a Will Butcher, when you're talking about having all the, a Taylor Hall, all of these good younger players that are coming up.
And I mean, the good thing about that contract is it's a one-year deal.
Agreed.
And maybe that has to be the new thing, too, is that these older guys, these guys that are in their 30s, are taking contracts for less years so that you don't have to carry that contract when some of your young guys need to get paid. So
to me, it seems like we're headed for, and again, I am no forecaster. I am not promising this. I would actually wish for the opposite, but it seems like we're going to be headed for another struggle between players and owners when it comes to how much money gets split up between whom. But if right now, if you ask me where the problem is, it's not the players, it's the GMs.
Yeah.
That don't seem to understand the value of the salary cap, the total dollar value that you have to spend in order to keep the players happy. Somebody always overspends, and somebody always gets burnt by it.
Yeah.
And right now we're seeing a handful of teams that simply have to just start unloading contracts because they don't know what to do.
Yeah, they can't pay everyone.
Right, and that's the problem. Like, GMs are the problem in this situation. Players are never going to refuse to take the money. That's the thing we have to remember.
Yeah.
And there's always going to be a negotiation between management and player.
Yeah.
But when Mitch Marner's starting value is $10 million because the market says that, and Toronto just laughs at it,
yeah,
understandably, Toronto's laughing at it not because they want to, but because they have to.
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe
because you've already got two guys on the roster making double-digit million-dollar salaries,
and maybe this changes offer sheets. Maybe offer sheets are now going to be like, well, we can't technically afford these guys now.
But how do you offer sheet somebody though if you have no salary cap?
Well, but I mean, teams that don't have salary caps, right, can offer sheet someone,
sure,
right, and then that team can't afford it. So now the team's going to be like, okay, you offer sheet him, we will give you him.
But the problem with the offer sheet, though, is you're still driving up salaries, and you're still causing a problem because now the picks you give back are going to be the same problem in 3 or 4 years. It's legitimately a dog-eat-dog cycle here.
And
all the GMs are doing is making it worse by doing more stuff.
Yeah.
Stop doing stuff.
Yeah.
I get you can't hold back. You can't collude and hold down salaries.
Yeah.
But if GMs don't learn how to curb their spending, we are going to be in salary cap hell forever. Yeah. And veterans, the guys who are turning 30 are going to be playing in Europe or going to be playing over in the KHL because there will be no market for the second and third liners here, and certainly not for the fourth liners, once those guys hit that age group.
Yeah. We've seen in free agency this year some of the ridiculous contracts guys got that are going to be third, fourth line guys.
Oh, I'm sorry, but I love the guy when he was here. He played hard for us. Kevin Hayes is at best a second line center in this league, and he is making more money than Mark Scheifele, who is a first line center.
Yeah, and I look at a guy like Brandon Tanev, who he's going to be probably a third line guy. Had great years, doesn't put up points, but is a great team guy.
Had a career year in points playing alongside two guys that made him better.
He's gonna get $3 million a year.
Well, and he did get $3 million a year from Pittsburgh. Who's he playing beside there?
Yeah, well, exactly. He doesn't have anybody to play beside, really.
Alex Galchenyuk, because he'll be slotted in behind Crosby
and
Malkin.
Passed around like a,
and who's on his left wing? Who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
So I don't know. To me, I think the problem again goes back to the fact that this is a one-up league, and people need to stop one-upping each other and just spend to what the market, stop establishing a false market and start paying to what the salary cap allows.
Yeah.
Because the salary cap is essentially your market, not the market value for players.
Yeah,
and if you go out there and you dump $7 million per season on Kevin Hayes, you've screwed the market over hard.
Yeah. And I mean, we've been used to the in future year or in past years, how maybe it's one or two teams that are getting to the cap and they have to offload some things. Now it's half the teams in the league are trying to offload guys because they can't, and then you got nobody to take these guys because they don't have salary room either. So it's you're clogging everything up. So it's,
or you got guys that are taking on dead contracts to open up salary cap space during the season so they can keep some of these young players around. Sorry, David Clarkson's never going to play again.
No,
I get that there's going to be an insurance payout for that, but you shouldn't be rewarded for acquiring stupid contracts.
Yeah.
But I guess that's part of where we go from here.
It's part of the league.
Part of where we go from here.
It's business.
We're going to take. Oh no, we got about five minutes before that. I just want to bring up the one contract again that's kind of bothering me because again it's for a really long time and it's for a lot of money. I don't understand 8 years at $9.5 million a season for Andre Vasilevsky. I mean, I get it.
How old is he?
24, 25, 26.
See, and that's not. It's not. bad at his age. It's the Bobrovsky one that I'm a little bit.
Well, the Bobrovsky one is because Florida has all this money to spend, and they got it, and they have no idea what to do with it.
But he's 30 years old,
right?
And they gave him what? Not 8 years?
8 years, yeah. Or 7 years or whatever it was. No, 7 years, because he can't be re-signed. But they re-signed Vasilevskiy to the max. That's 8 years at $9.5 million annually.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, Vasilevskiy's a fantastic goaltender.
And a Vezina goalie.
Sure, yeah. Vezina winner, and certainly has done great things in the regular season. Put up your postseason resume. Because that $9.5 million better bring you something other than a Vezina trophy. When you look at the end of the season, the results at that point.
You got a lot of guys on that team that have very large contracts that haven't brought you anything.
No, and I get that.
Yeah.
Again, I get that. Yeah. He's now the third highest paid goaltender in the league, though, behind only Florida's Sergei Bobrovsky and Montreal's Carey Price.
Yep.
Carey Price has been to a Stanley Cup final. Vasilevskiy's been there as well, but as a backup. Bobrovsky has beaten Vasilevskiy.
Yeah.
In a very monster upset.
Media-driven. Media-driven.
Four games to none is a monster upset. But the 25-year-old, that's where he is, 25, has lots of good hockey left.
Oh, for sure.
But I don't understand why teams need to give a goaltender $9.5 million a season when he needs defensemen and forwards to help him out in a very big way.
Yeah.
I get he should get some money. I'm not saying he shouldn't get a raise from $3.5 million he's making right now, maybe five, maybe six.
But this is the way we've been talking all the time.
But this is the problem.
You're overpaying people.
Right.
And it's creating log jams at the bottom. Technically at the bottom, you're creating log jams with all these restricted free agents.
So here, and again, here's the problem I have. John Gibson last year was slightly better for personal statistics, yep, let me put that word out, than Vasilevskiy. John Gibson currently signed right now, $6.16 million.
Yeah.
Okay.
A terrible team.
Or 8 years of 6.4, sorry. 6.4. But if John Gibson played for the Lightning, I'm not saying they beat Columbus at all. I'm not saying that that's a possibility.
Yeah.
But John Gibson could have won 62 games last year.
Yeah.
He had his statistics were slightly better playing on a worse team.
Yeah, and that's the point you brought up, is that you need defensemen, you need forwards, Freddie. So
if Gibson had to work harder to get better stats, imagine what he could do behind Tampa Bay's defense. Yeah.
Gibson was a Vezina goalie.
Right. On an awful non-playoff Anaheim Ducks team. So here's where it falls apart, though. Corey Schneider signed a 7-year, $42 million deal in 2015, and his game disappeared sometime in the summer of 2016. Not sure where it went. He didn't win for an entire calendar year.
Yeah.
Didn't post a win for 12 months. And Corey Schneider is still being questioned as whether or not he's a number one goaltender in the NHL. Connor Hellebuyck had an incredible 2017-2018 with the Jets. He was nominated for the Vezina Trophy, did really well, signed a 6-year deal for $6.16 million, and then his game went south last season.
Yep. Get paid, get out.
Getting paid, doing what we got. Jonathan Quick's deal in Los Angeles was for 10 years and $58 million when he signed it. And yet the Kings can't convince anybody to take $5.8 million off their books.
Which is a deal. Which is a steal compared to
these goals. So when you look at this, though, the risk is that injuries, in Jonathan Quick's case, poor play in Schneider and Hellebuck's case, and if you're talking about Gibson, a chance to sign a big contract and then go out and prove it is exactly where Vasilevskiy is. You now have to prove for the next 8 years that you're a Vezina candidate for every single year, because only Carey Price, who was arguably at the time when he signed that contract the best goaltender in the league,
had some injuries,
and Bobrovsky, who basically just ate up Florida's money because it's tax free, are the only goaltenders that are going to be making more than you for the next 8 years.
Yeah.
This is a ridiculous contract.
And if you don't perform, and there's no way Tampa can get rid of you.
Well, no, there is. And here's why. And this is where I did some breaking down. I went looking into this. So in the first three seasons of his $72 million deal, he's paid out $34 million of that in bonuses.
Yeah.
And has a full, not just a modified, not just a select team, a full no movement clause until 25-26. Tampa Bay has basically told everybody, this is our guy for the next 6 years
don't
minimum.
Don't even come knocking.
It doesn't matter if you do. He's saying no.
That's incredible.
In the however, when the no movement clause finally moves to a modified no movement clause in the final three seasons of the deal, Vasilevskiy has to provide a team the teams at which he could be dealt to. If that were to happen, there are $10 million in bonuses owed over those three seasons, while the base salary is just $13 million. So you might acquire the $9.5 million cap hit, but you're not paying anywhere near that money in terms of salary. Yeah. That's what Arizona does when they want to get to the cap floor and not spend very much money. That's an Arizona deal right there.
Yeah.
Tampa Bay has done the right thing, except they're still on the hook for $9.5 million a season. That's the problem with this deal.
Yeah.
Is that for the first 6 years of the deal, or first 5 years of the deal, you're basically stuck with this guy no matter how well or how poor he plays.
Yeah. You gotta play him because you're paying him.
And you're paying him a lot of money.
Yeah.
Half the contract is paid out in the first three seasons.
That was another issue I had with these contracts is all these bonuses getting paid up front, all this big money getting paid up front.
I guess if you got the money, spend it, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Do they have the money, though? That's that's been the issue. Nobody's got the money.
Well, apparently their owner does because he okayed it, so. So, I mean, I look at this and I just go, this could be an absolute team killer if he doesn't play well. Yeah. I mean, again, and we're not saying he won't. Vasilevskiy, he's been great for the last 2 years. He's been outstanding.
Sans playoffs.
Well, we'll see what happens this
year.
Don't
blame him always for the playoffs. But.
But when we look at this and we look at this entire setup for this new deal, this is the problem with GMs in this league right now. They're overvaluing and overpaying players for the contributions they're making at their positions.
Yep.
It's the same thing that I said, and again, I didn't say it on this program. I wish I would have at the time, but it's the same issue I have with Jacob Trouba, thinking that he's the number one defenseman in this town at $8 million a season. You're not.
Yep.
You're not. You've overvalued your contributions entirely, and you were worse when guys like Trouba when Morrissey and Bufflin were out of the lineup. You were awful.
Yeah.
You can't play the power play. You occasionally chip in on the penalty kill, but you're not an $8 million defender. You're not a Drew Doughty. You're not an Erik Karlsson.
What did he get in New York? Did he get seven, eight?
Eight. He got eight, yeah.
See, there's always someone willing to pay you, though.
But that's the problem.
Always some. If you don't want to get, if you're not going to get it from here, you're going to get it from there.
And that's entirely the catch on this one. With that, though, we're going to take a quick break for the legal ID. 25 seconds, folks. We'll be back, and we're going to get into all sorts of other stuff here on The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
Think of your children pledging allegiance to the maple leaf. Mayonnaise on everything. Winter, 11 months of the year. Ann Murray, all day. Every day.
CJUM FM 101.5, running on 100% Canadian volunteer power.
We are back here on The Hockey Show, 101.5 UM FM. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. If you build it, he will come, according to at least a few viewings of Field of Dreams. It seems that the city of Calgary is prepared to start building, as they decided to pass off a monster amount of money in public funds to the Calgary Sports Entertainment Group that owns the Stampeders and owns the Flames. $275 million in public funds, with very few details as to where it's being spent, while simultaneously cutting $60 million from the budgets of transit, police, and fire protection in Calgary, was the vote that was held and done and voted on at the end of July. On July 30th, the city of Calgary, the city councilors, passed that deal 11-4.
It's funny, the important things don't matter, right?
I'm not certain about this, but I'm pretty certain that they're going to have to, you know, use some public funds to build all new roads and infrastructure and all sorts of stuff to get to that new arena. But hey, don't worry about the details.
You know what? Just most of those guys are cattle ranch farmers. They just walk through these fields anyways. Let's just let them walk through fields, put in a field while everybody walk through it.
So here's where, again, this isn't an economic show. I am not going to say I'm ever wise in that area, but here, public funds should never be given to billionaires. I'm just gonna drop that on everybody right now.
No, I mean, we did it here, but it's a team that's publicly owned.
we didn't give them 270. We didn't give the Jets 275 million.
Well, I'm talking about Bombers.
Bombers are a little bit different. Yeah. But again, we didn't give them $275 million either.
Give them that, no.
And again, there was some repayment. There was some stuff. Yeah. We finally wrote off the debt. Okay, no big deal.
Yeah.
Here's where I start having a problem with this. Okay, we gave $275 million in public funds of Calgary money to a group of billionaires, including Murray Edward, who's worth $2.1 billion, billion dollars, to build a $550 million sports and entertainment complex, or sports and shopping complex, whatever. And I get that. I get what's going to go on. The Flames, as part of the deal, have made a commitment that they'll invest $75 million over 35 years to local sports charities rather than paying the city rent for the use of the new arena, while the city will get 2% of all revenues generated over the first 35 years. Okay. Ticket tax that's included in the deal would amount to approximately $155 million, which will flow directly into the city's coffers. Okay, so we're $275 million.
Yep.
We've now made $155 million back. Okay, so we're still 140 short.
Yep.
But we got more. There's more here. Even though the property taxes and rent on this arena would probably be a lot more money.
Yep.
But let's just throw that, out of the window here. $4.5 million annually is the shortfall they have to make up. Okay? $4.5 million annually.
Yep.
They just raised the property tax rate in Calgary, which caused a huge uproar from city residents.
Yep. Well, got to pay for that arena somehow.
And businesses, which would have gone, again, into their pocket.
Yeah.
But, according to a Canadian Press article, quote, the city says the projected return to Calgarians is $400.3 million over the course of the 35-year agreement with the Flames. $400.3 million is what they're estimating. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, do you know how they got that number?
Math.
There is no way, depending on who goes into those shops and everything, there's going to be some payment back. The return on investment for a $275 million, $275 million investment would have been $125.3 million if this $400 million figure is correct. Okay?
Yep.
The problem, though, is that they're estimating that the dollar today is going to be the same as what it is in 35 years.
Probably won't.
According to a gentleman, and I will bring up Calgary Associate Economics Professor Trevor Tome, says, quote, a dollar in 35 years is worth a lot less than a dollar today. Inflation alone eats away at half the value of that dollar over the course of 3.5 decades.
So sounds like a guy knows what he's talking about.
So in reality, they're not even doing finance proper. Finance 101 would laugh you out of the classroom at that point.
Yeah.
There's also the potential for a $47 million net loss on this.
You're either going to make $400 million or you're going to lose $47. Man. It's people that...
So remember, we were $140 million short already
from
that ticket tax. Add in the $47 million, you're looking at a $172 million projected loss right now. Remember,
got new arena.
Keep giving money to billionaires.
And do they own the arena? Or the city own the arena?
No, the city would own the arena.
Yeah, so the city owns the arena.
But again, Calgary's booking everything in there for the winter. So what are you going to do over the summer? Book a handful of concerts? Yay.
I guess so.
So here's the other part that taxpayers weren't informed about, is that the current location for this new revitalization of this area involves demolishing the current Saddle Dome, which will cost taxpayers $12 million.
Just keep digging that hole. And
I'm not certain about this. I don't know how Mayor Nenshi, who originally said he would only commit $180 million of public money, suddenly thought it would be okay to commit $275 million.
Peer pressure.
And then cut $60 million from major services that the city needs.
We've had this discussion before. I can't remember if it was someone.
Always.
But when you build a new arena, you do not make anything off of.
Right.
Building new arenas, you do not make money off
We ran the story with John Oliver a number of, a year or two ago, 3 years ago, whenever he had that information on, about how public money that goes into arenas is never recouped, ever. In any situation, ever in the history of man, have public funds ever been recouped.
Yep.
But hey, what can you do? Calgary.
When these billionaires have this...
Calgary's got a new arena coming.
When these billionaires have that push and that influence on political figures, this is what you get.
I don't know. I can't understand this. I can't understand how the view in Calgary has changed. And the only thing, and if you're listening out in Calgary, maybe you got a different opinion. You can tweet at me. You can do whatever at Teebs HBIC if you want. But the question becomes, if you aren't a hockey fan, how does this benefit you?
You're paying for something you don't.
Not only are you paying for it, but you got 35 years of payments coming for it.
Yeah. Just hopefully it all's over before that. Before you get to 35 years.
Just remember when you go to vote in the next election, who voted for what.
Yeah.
Because they cut $60 million out of your transit, your police, and your fire services in order to pay $275 million to a guy who's worth $2.1 billion.
So when your house is on fire and you're being robbed and there's no vehicles can get there because transit sucks.
Calgary Flames
got a new arena.
Calgary Flames are awesome. Look at my house. I got the perfect example.
Calgary Flames are out in the first round again.
Which leads to the next arena debate. Because another arena was announced this week in terms of, it's not completely done, and I've already talked to him. He'll be on the show coming up soon. But Belmont,
they've already started the digging, haven't they?
Belmont is that much closer to getting an arena now for the New York Islanders. Mm-hmm. If you've been following the saga in terms of what's going on, you know they played at the Barclays Center and everybody hates it there because there's like one section of the, you can't even see the opposing net or the home net or whatever. But New York State Board that's responsible for economic development unanimously approved a $1.3 billion development on Thursday.
$1.3 billion.
Last Thursday, not this Thursday, but last Thursday. In terms of getting it going, temper the celebrations a little bit though, because there's still some things some hurdles they got to clear. But the biggest one has been cleared. Belmont in Nassau County is getting a new arena.
There you go.
Again, there's some other stuff. Franchise Oversight Board must approve that an environmental review be done before a single speck of dirt can be moved. That sounds like it's going to go through without any problems. There's still 120 days from last Thursday, which people can file lawsuits if they have a concern about anything going on. Again, it sounds like the group is willing to work with whomever wants to file a lawsuit to find an agreeable solution to whatever problem there. Yeah. Basically, what it comes down to is that by 2021-22, the Islanders could be playing in a brand new arena.
Back in Nassau.
Back on the island in Nassau County.
Exciting for those Islanders fans, eh?
I think it's pretty good. I don't really agree with $1.3 billion of public funds being used. However, this is the New York State Economic Board, or board that responsible for economic development. So
whole state.
The state is chipping in for the Islanders on this, and it sounds, with a large chunk of that population being in New York City, it sounds like they're...
So the Rangers are paying for it, and then... No, not the Devils. Well, maybe the Devils would pay for it.
Buffalo Sabres certainly
are. Buffalo Sabres. There's a bunch of teams playing for this new arena.
But it sounds like the Islanders are on the verge of getting a new arena as well. So
that's awesome.
Two new arenas coming up in 2021 at the very earliest. As if everything with Calgary's goes through, they said that it could be built by 2021. So we could see two brand new rinks in the next couple of years for NHL teams.
Yeah. If any fan base deserves it, I think the Islanders do it. They haven't had a stable home for
after
a while.
Again, after seeing them turn Nassau Memorial Coliseum into Thunderdome in that first round. They deserve it. They are a fan base that's been yanked around for the last decade. Play here, play there, play everywhere. Yeah. Let's get into a home now.
There you go.
So that's kind of cool. Two new rinks that are going on. A little bit of more local news. Brandon Wheat Kings and the Winnipeg Ice have now, from the WHL, have both finalized their coaching staffs. I don't know if anybody picked up on this, but I certainly did.
There you go.
The Winnipeg Ice will be coached this year. Head coach James Patrick, former New York Ranger, Winnipeg boy. Former Quebec Nordique John Clem. And former Vancouver Vancouver Canuck and Edmonton Oiler Josh Green, former guest of the show.
There you go.
So those three will command the bench for the Winnipeg Ice in their inaugural season here in Winnipeg.
I remember when Josh Green, he was just coaching the little guys. And
not only that, he had a stint with the Winnipeg Blues last year. They actually promoted him from the Blues to the Ice, and they're going to have a full NHL bench then this year, which will be kind of cool to see.
Wow, that's a quick move in... quick moving up the ladder for Josh Green.
You know what? A great hockey mind, though. Yeah. He was an analyst last season on TSN Radio when the Jets and the Moose were on, and certainly gave some good insight there. I thought he did a really good job there, and certainly I think that, you know, getting him sort of set up and ready to go in this role as an assistant coach under James Patrick is a good idea. So I don't have a problem with that.
Where was James Patrick coaching before? Was he?
He was with Cootney before. Cootney before, I believe. I'll just look it up and see what happens. But I'm pretty sure him and Clem have been with the Cootney Ice for a little bit here. Yeah, Cootney since 2017. Yeah.
Okay.
He was with Dallas. Actually, he was an assistant coach with Dallas Stars before that and the Buffalo Sabres before that. So. Yeah. Patrick's been doing some coaching as well. Down the road, in the city of Brandon, they also have some new coaches.
The rivals now.
Exactly. The rivalry is getting strong. Former NHLer Dave Lowry, appointed to be the bench boss there. So good move by them. Dave's been all over the place. He's been coaching all over the place. He originally started with the Hitmen, Calgary Hitmen, in 2008-2009. He jumped up to be an assistant coach with Calgary Flames and then went back out to the WHL where he coached Victoria and really put him on the map there as the guy. Never posted a losing record with Victoria, coached the Royals to the playoffs in each season while compiling a 209, 124, and 27 record. After the assistant coaching position with he accepted an assistant coaching position with Willie Desjardins and the Los Angeles Kings last season, but Lowry will now return to Brandon, where he'll be the 23rd head coach of the Brandon Wheat Kings.
There you go. He'll be closer to son Adam Lowry.
So, yeah, you can see Adam a little bit more often, which is all right. Alongside Dave Lowry in Brandon will be a guy who's very well known around this rink and around this campus, and certainly a guy that's well-known throughout the hockey community. Don McGilvery will return as an assistant coach for Dave Lowry. As you may be aware, he's coached all levels of amateur hockey in Manitoba. He spent a ton of time in the MJHL, Portage, Neepawa, St. James, Winnipeg Blues. He spent time with the Prince Albert Raiders. He's been all over the map. Three seasons as a head coach of the University of Manitoba Bisons, which men's team, which was awesome. He was named CIS Coach of the Year in 2008 with the Bisons. He was also named MJHL Coach of the Year in 95, 2005, 2012, 2013, and won an MJHL championship with the Portage Terriers in terms of his success. McGilvery is probably one of the best assistant coaches in the WHL, certainly a guy that I don't think Brandon wanted to really risk losing. No, so for sure. Don McGilvery does return to the fold, which is nice to see. Another guy that's coming back, Tyler Plant, former Wheat Kings goaltender. He'll be the goaltending coach for Brandon. It'll be his fourth season with the team. Plant played in Europe, the ECHL, and the AHL over nine seasons. Currently counts NCAA women's hockey champion Kristen Campbell of the Wisconsin Badgers as one of his proteges. But Plant, a former Wheat King, comes back for his fourth season. He's already got a pretty good working relationship with Yuri Patera and with Ethan Kruger, the two goaltenders in Brandon. Patera is a Golden Knights draft pick as well, so chance maybe to see him. Obviously, the ties to McCrimmon and Kelly McCrimmon and in Vegas helping out. Last man behind the bench this season, the guy that we may have heard of a little bit, kind of famous for some of the stuff that he did, Mark Derlego will be the fourth guy behind the bench this year. Mark Derlego, 162 points in 229 games with the Wheat Kings. He suited up in the AHL, ECHL, Europe, and Asia for eight seasons. Retired from the Metalligan in Denmark with Esbjerg Energy. It was the last place he played. And Derlego, that's where he played last year anyway. Derlego comes back to the place where he started and certainly found the most success as the second assistant in Lowry's staff. So Derlego getting a little bit of a boost there as he gets he's been through the ringer. He knows what's going on. He'll help the kids out.
Beginning his coaching career. This is his first
Will be his first time into it. So Lowry's got himself a good coaching staff as well. I think the way these two teams are built right now, we could see a very, very spirited matchup every time they clash. And they will do so 10 times this season.
Yeah, and bring bringing these coaches in that have roots in these cities and in this province. So it's nice to see.
Good idea for both of these teams to sort of keep it local, which is nice to see. One of the big pieces of news that wasn't reported is that the 2021 U Sports Hockey Championship locations were announced. As we know, next year it'll be back in Lethbridge for the men. It'll be back in Lethbridge for the men in the 2019-2020 season. It'll be back out in PEI for the women. The following season after, 2020-2021, they have been awarded. The men will go to PEI as PEI becomes a three-time host, three in a row for them.
Hey, they must do a good job.
You know what? They're actually taking over the rink where the Charlottetown Islanders play for the men's tournament, so they're expecting a bigger crowd to come out there, which will be awesome. But they had fantastic crowd to the women's tournament this past year when we went out there. So here's hoping, knock on wood, they can continue building on the success, have another great tournament this year, and then translate that into a monster tournament for the men in 2021. The women will be headed to Montreal in 2021 as the University of Montreal, Les Carabins, will host the U Sports National Championship out there. That is going to be an outstanding time because Montreal has got all sorts of stuff to do and all sorts of history, and it's a hockey town.
Big city,
everybody will want to be in on that. And obviously having the crosstown rivalry with Concordia, I'm sure there's going to be some fun there. I don't know if that's going to...
With PEI, that's kind of good for their sports teams getting in these championships every year.
For the women's side last year, we talked to Sophie Vandale, who's from Winnipeg. She plays out there. She was excited about it, and she said, like, we don't even care. Like, we came in the first year, last year.
Yeah.
We came in the first year, and we knew we were going to get our butts kicked. Yeah. But we're building for this year. So, for the men's team now, they got 2 years to really get themselves going and build up towards it. And that's going to be a good thing, because if they got a little bit of lead time on there, they could probably get a handful of good players going there, and the way they run with it. So, so it should be good. It's always a good thing to see that in terms of getting everything going. A couple other small pieces of news. You may not have heard of them, but you may have heard of them. If you're a golfing fan, Garrett Rank may be a name that you recognize. Garrett Rank is an NHL referee. Mm-hmm. And Garrett, who when he's not on the ice, well, he loves a little game of golf.
Yeah.
He's pretty good at it.
He is pretty good.
For those that don't know, Garrett actually won a major tournament over the last few weeks here. He earned the George R. Thorne Trophy out in Benton Harbor, Michigan, for winning the 117th Western Amateur at Point of Woods Golf and Country Club.
Nice.
He won it. That's fantastic.
So it's an amateur tournament.
It's an amateur tournament, yeah. He said he's had no interest in playing professional golf. He's got a professional career already. He can't make that kind of commitment, but he will go play amateur tournaments and certainly get things going. Now, you may recognize Rank if you were certainly a fan of U Sports hockey in Ontario. He used to be a really good hockey player at the Waterloo Warriors, where he was a double scholarship athlete in both hockey and golf. Unfortunately, and this is where things had to sort of slow down for him, in the second year of university, he was diagnosed with testicular cancer and had to give up hockey.
Shoot.
But Rank stuck with the golfing and certainly has done really well, came back to hockey in terms of becoming an official, and is now working as a referee. The 31-year-old basically had a monster week in terms of playing really well. It was stroke play. So he finished fifth at 600 in stroke play on Thursday, but he basically came back and rallied hard and beat a kid from Daniel Wetterich from Cincinnati, Ohio. So that's not bad.
Nice.
Pretty good, yeah.
He's a talented fella.
He started the season as the 97th, he's ranked as the 97th golfer in the world amateur golf rankings right now, but his name will now go on the same trophy that was won by Tiger Woods, ooh, Jack Nicklaus, Phil Mickelson, and Ben Crenshaw.
That's what makes it huge.
That right there, just being in that illustrious group, is pretty awesome.
That's amazing. Yeah.
The win will also give Rank an exemption into next year's Evans Scholars Invitational at the Glen Club in Glenview in Illinois. So gets a big break, and certainly did really well in terms of getting in, and now Garrett Rank will have something to do next summer. I mean, he's going to be golfing anyway, but something to do for sure in terms of
you're going to be golfing anyways.
Yeah, planning a little trip to Glenview, Illinois. There you go.
Yeah, awesome.
So congratulations to him. That's awesome. He is playing this weekend Next week, I guess. Next weekend. Next weekend in the Canadian Mid-Amateur Championship on August 20, 23rd, before reporting to NHL training camps on September 9th when he goes back to his regular job. So he's got a chance to win at least one more major tournament, but Garrett Rank already putting his name in the record books there.
On the big trophies.
Yeah. Congratulations to him. That's always a good thing to see. And I know we didn't mention it off the top, but we'll mention it now. If you've been keeping an eye on everything going on social media today, folks, something a little bit closer to our community as well. August 15th, 2011, unfortunately, was the date when Rick Rippon committed suicide. It is a pretty heartfelt sort of anniversary in that a lot of people around here remembering all the good that Rick did for everybody. And certainly he was one of those guys that came to work every day, tried to put a smile on his face, and certainly battled the demons. But Rick was an outstanding guy in the dressing room. And I mean, basically almost became a son to Moose GM Craig Heisinger, who talked him through some tough times. If you saw the documentary about it, if you haven't, look it up on YouTube. I know it's up on YouTube, but it's one of those days where you want to be happy in terms of the memories that you have, but it's tough to remember that Rick's no longer with us.
Yeah, so. I mean, they always remember him every year. They always got the Rick Rippon sticker on or whatever they got.
So the number 11 on the back of the helmet there.
He was a big influence on this team and continues to be every day. So
you know, he's one of those guys though. When the Moose were affiliated with Vancouver, I mean, obviously he's Vancouver, he was Vancouver property at that point before he was traded to the Jets, but. One of those guys when he was with the Moose every year that he'd give you 110% no matter what was going on the ice. He'd be out there scoring goals, or he'd be in a fight, or never back down from anybody, never back down from a challenge. And certainly one of those guys that all the kids love to sort of go and meet after the game. You know, he'd high five kids, and certainly autographs and you know, everything else that kids wanted signed. It was good to see Rick, you know, out at the rink. I had the pleasure of watching him when I was covering the Moose for a few years, and he was a difference maker out there. But I don't know, unfortunately, it's one of those things where life just caught up to him, and certainly that's not good. So either way, we want to make sure that people are aware. Mental health stuff still going on, and certainly if you need some help, get some help. Find some spots for it. There's some good spots out there. Kids Help Phone obviously is a good place to start if you're on the younger side. If you're a little bit older, there's some good resources out there as well. Make sure if you're struggling in any way, get the help that you need. And certainly you can call us if you have to. We will certainly talk to you
We're always willing to listen.
Yeah, we will talk. So with that, next week, folks, you want to tune into this one. This is going to be a good one here on this show as we have Carla Bursch coming on. You may not recognize the name. Carla Bursch is I don't know if she's considered a professor out there. Maybe just anyway, she's an advocate for now. Advocate. She teaches about sexual violence out at the University of Calgary to students and to faculty and to the teams. And she's running a course with the University of Calgary Dinos right now that basically looks at sexual violence in sports. That includes everything from consent to racism and homophobia, to a topic that we mention a lot on this program, especially when it comes up over and over again, which is hazing. We're going to talk to Carla about all the stuff that she's doing at the University of Calgary next week. You want to tune in for that one. It's going to be a good one. I'm excited to talk to her because I think she's going to be, in terms of being an expert in the field, she is. I think she's going to bring some real levity, some real important information to people as well who may have questions or just don't know what to ask, if there's anybody who needs to ask any questions about stuff that's going on behind closed doors.
And I mean, with school starting very soon again, I mean, and hockey season starting very soon again, I mean, it's a good topic to talk about because it does happen, and it happens too often. So.
Far too often, and especially with some of the the stories that are around there, St. Michael's with the football scandal, and certainly Nipawin Natives, we heard some problems with them here in Manitoba. We've seen the problems with Lethbridge in terms of the U Sports stuff. We've seen the problems in the OHL with Sarnia. There's a lot of stuff going on that people don't talk about, and we need to start talking about this stuff. So next week is going to be an important, it's going to be a far more serious show than we normally do, but at the same time, though, it's going to be on a very good topic that we believe needs to be brought up, especially with school starting and with hockey season starting up again in September, tryouts and everything going on. You need to be listening to this one, folks. It's going to be a good one. Anything else you want to say before we get out of your beans? Because Skippy's coming on next.
We'll see you next Thursday.
Next Thursday. Here is Trixie from Rhea May once more as we get out of here for another Thursday. We'll see you next week with Carla Bursch, everybody. Have a good one. It's the hockey show, on 101.5 UMFM.
You don't know my name. You might know.